All right, folks, we're finally there, the seventh of John's seven signs in his gospel. So who's ready for the final and biggest quiz? All seven signs, who studied? Okay, good, we got at least two people willing to say they studied, we'll see. First sign, water into wine. Healing the royal official's son. Third sign. Paralytic at the pool. Fourth sign. Feeding the 5,000. Fifth sign. Sixth sign. Seventh sign. All right. As I see people looking at their phones, you know what? And in church. You know what, that's between you and God. So here we are, the seventh sign. One of Jesus' I am statements and his biggest, raising Lazarus from the dead. And like I told the kids, the shortest verse, Jesus wept. And I think it's one of the most powerful verses in the Bible at that. And for me, it's the scariest verse, too. I mean, I guess it disturbs me in some way to think of a God who cries. Try to get your head around that for a minute. I mean, after all, what do we tell our children? Only babies cry, or big boys don't cry, or, as Frankie Valli and Fergie say, big girls don't cry, right? So it's a little upsetting to imagine a God who cries. Because crying is usually taken as a sign of weakness or helplessness, and it's something we do in response to a bad situation when there's nothing else that we can do. We cry out of fear or frustration or helplessness, like when someone we love dies and we know that there's nothing that we can do about it. And yet Jesus wept. Tears of frustration, tears of frustration, anger, resentment. And how often have you cried those tears in your life? How often have we cried our tears when things don't go our way? When we pray to God and our prayers seem to go unanswered? Or when God answers our prayers but not in the way that we'd have God answer them? That's exactly what happens in today's gospel lesson. Lazarus had died, and Jesus was his only hope for healing. But he dragged his feet, and he got there 3 days too late. Mary, the sister of Lazarus, echoes our own feelings of frustration when she says to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And you can almost, at least I can almost hear her spitting those words at Jesus, "If you had only been here, my brother wouldn't have died." How many times in our own lives have we voiced those same words through tears and in anger and in frustration with God? "Lord, if you had only been here." You fill in the rest of the sentence. Mary's words are our words as well. Mary's reaction to Jesus is our reaction as well. "Lord, if you had only been here. Lord, if you had only answered my prayer. Lord, if you had only done like I wanted you to do." And the tears flow. Jesus wept. That shortest and I think scariest verse in the Bible. You see, God's not supposed to cry. That's our job. God's supposed to act. And yet Jesus weeps. And that's the way that God in Jesus Christ chooses to react to Mary's question. He weeps. Weeps for the loss of his friend Lazarus. He weeps for Mary's pain and grief and her anger. He weeps for Mary's lack of faith. He weeps for the lack of faith on our part sometime. Jesus wept. That's God's answer to our questions. That's how God answers our fears and our doubts and our angers. And that's how God chooses to answer all of our why questions. Jesus wept. The word in Greek that John uses for weeping is that kind of slow and silent kind of crying, not the loud hysterical crying, but that slow, silent kind where there's just a single tear and just that little bit of movement in the shoulders. But you know, as we read this story, we realize that there didn't have to be so many tears. In fact, if Jesus has done as Martha and Mary had wanted, there didn't need to be any tears shed at all except tears of gladness. This story could have been just another one of John's signs involving a healing, right? He already had two. And everyone could have just been spared the tears and the distress and had a party at Thanksgiving instead. So why did Jesus allow Lazarus to die? Surely he could have saved him. I mean, how many other people had he brought back to life in his ministry? Certainly the God who had redeemed Egypt with his outstretched hand and mighty arm could have acted in Jesus Christ to save Lazarus from death. But he didn't. Why not? I know that's a dangerous question for us to ask, and maybe we're really not ready for the answer. That's where the commentary that Jesus gives to his disciples gets so painfully uncomfortable for us. Because his explanations are not too satisfying for our ears, are they? Did you hear how Jesus spoke to his disciples? He weeps with Martha and Mary out of compassion. But a simple action on his part could have taken care of his need for any compassion. He says to Martha, "Do you believe that I am the resurrection and the life? Do you believe? Do you believe that those who believe in me will never die, and those who die believing in me will live again? Do you believe?" He asks Martha. And he asks each one of us that question as well. Because at some point in our lives, we just can't run from that question. At some point in our lives, we need to confront the question raised by the one who answers our whys with, "I am the resurrection and the life. Do you believe?" Do you believe, Jesus says, as he prepares to raise Lazarus? "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? Didn't I tell you enough times with my words and my deeds that if you only believed in me and believed in the one who sent me, that you would see the glory of God?" You know, I want to tell you, and I know it's the same for you, that there are times in my life and in yours that we have cried out to God for intervention. You know those nights? And you say, things are about as bad and desperate as they can get. Lord, do something. Help me. And no answer comes. You know those nights? And it's hard to accept. It's hard to believe that God can be so silent in the face of our pain and our need. And it's hard to wait, and it hurts. And those linen bindings, like around Lazarus, get wrapped around us just a little more tightly with each passing day of inaction and silence on God's part. Do you know what? I'm gradually, and I mean like little baby steps, learning that that is never the end of the story. Gradually learning what God said so clearly through the prophet Isaiah, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways." That's what's so difficult, because God is not us, and God does not act like we act. There are dimensions to our problems that he sees that we can't even imagine. There are possibilities and opportunities in every situation that we can't conceive of. So we wait, and slowly and sometimes painfully, we learn to trust, knowing that God is working out something in our lives. Our good shepherd wants us to be able to hear and to listen to his voice as he calls to us through the darkness, through the stone, through the linen wrappings, and through the stillness of death itself. And that's what this sign number 7 is all about, learning to trust. Learning to trust that God in Jesus Christ always has our best intentions and our ultimate salvation at heart. Learning to trust that even and especially in our pain and suffering and grief, that God has the bigger picture of our life in mind. From a personal point of view, as I've taken that walk to the grave with my parents these past months, it's a lesson in trust. You know what? I don't want to learn it. And I don't like learning it. And I felt my trust and faith education was way more complete without those lessons. And don't you feel the same way too? That you don't need any more lessons in trust? Well, golly gee whiz, that's not the way that life works or how our God works. But back to the story. You could have heard a pin drop, I think, as that stone was rolled away from the tomb. It was that quiet as everyone prepares, for God only knows what to happen. And the only sound is Jesus in a loud voice crying out, "Lazarus, come out." Well, you know the rest of the story, and you know how it ends. And Jesus stands and waits for us to answer, so that he can call out to us as well. Come out. Come out of your ordinary life and step into life made complete, into life made eternal. Leave the grave clothes behind. Take off the cloth that covers your head. Open yourself to the good news of the gospel. Come out from under the crushing weight of the power of sin and death. Come out and into the glorious light and the amazing joy of life eternal in the one who is the resurrection and the life. Do you believe this? Do you believe that you will see God's glory here and now? Jesus wept. Back to where we started, he wept. He stood with Martha and Mary in their time of need and their time of grief and loss, and he wept. And you know what? Those two little words, "Jesus wept," I think make all the difference in the world, in their story, and to us. And Jesus stands with us now and always. God in the person of Jesus Christ stands with us, weeps with us in our time of pain and our time of need, no matter where we are, no matter how dark the night or how lost in that valley of tears and suffering that we may find ourselves. No matter the reason we suffer, Jesus weeps with us and is there with us in our fear and our suffering and our pain. And most of all, he's with us and closest to us in our anguish when our prayers seem to go unanswered or misanswered or downright ignored. Like with Lazarus, and this is the hard part to get your head around, there's sometimes a greater glory to be revealed in us than the one we're willing to settle for. For Martha and Mary, there was a greater glory to be revealed in their lives than just the healing of their sick brother. And so too, when we seem to be knocking on heaven's door and no one is answering, there just may be a greater glory to be revealed than the one we're looking for. But you know what? It's so painful to wait for it, isn't it? And every time I hear the story of Lazarus, I can picture that amazing scene between Jesus and Martha so clearly in my mind. The two of them standing so close, I imagine like face to face. Martha's still hungry and thirsting, yet holding out hope for one more miracle. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." And Jesus saying, your brother will rise again. And Martha replying, I know that he'll rise again in the resurrection on that last day. And then Jesus both saying and asking, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And then there's that awkward silence as Martha gets ready to answer that million-dollar question. Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world. Do you believe? Do you believe that you will see the glory of God here and now? Do you believe in the one called the resurrection and the life? When I think about this story of Lazarus, I have to ask myself what the real miracle is here. Is it the return from the dead of a man who had died 4 days ago? Maybe. But think about this. It's not Lazarus Jesus is talking to. He's dead and buried. And dead men don't answer questions. It's Martha to whom he announces, I am the resurrection and the life. It's for Martha who can only look to the future, to that glorious day when the dead will be raised, who'd rather forget today that Jesus speaks. And it's for Mary and her profound sadness that he weeps. It's for Mary living the hell of today and afraid to look to the future in any way that he says, I am the resurrection and the life. It's for the doubts and the questions of the crowd that he says it. It's for all of us gathered this morning and wondering where our lives are going that he says, I am the resurrection and the life. So what's the real miracle and sign here in sign number 7? A dead man walking? Or is it those of us who are still living being called back into hope and the promise and the joy of having that resurrected life here and now? Is it Martha and Mary who need a little resurrection of their faith and their hope? Is it the crowd who needs to be reborn to new faith? What's the real miracle here? Because Lazarus is not one of the main characters in this story. He has a little cameo appearance at the very end. And while he'll be mentioned again later in John's gospel, he never actually has a speaking part. And that's pretty odd for a story about bringing a dead man back to life, isn't it? Especially a close friend of Jesus. The real miracle is that God who weeps for us is the same God who reminds us that he is the resurrection and the life. That's the promise of the gospel. The offer that Jesus makes to us is that we too, we who weep and mourn, we who are tired and broken, we who feel ignored and forgotten, can claim that resurrection life for ourselves. What if Jesus was directing that command, Lazarus, come forth to you and to your life? What would it look like to be unbound and to let go for you? How would it feel? What would it free you up to do? Because that's the desire of the one who reassures us that he is the resurrection and the life, that our lives will be unbound and set free. Maybe our greater glory can only come to be once we're willing to come out of the tomb of today, when we're able to come out of the tomb of old attitudes and old hurts and old thoughts that keep us captive to a past that we need to leave behind for good. Maybe our greater glory can only come to us after we can make peace with the pain of today, so that we can hear Jesus calling us to come forth and to loose the bindings that are holding our lives tight in death. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Well, do you? Amen.